Hi, I'm T-Morris87, a.k.a. Trevor Morris. I make custom content for the Icewind Dale module.
Hi, I'm Egwin Tyr Ellegaard, a.k.a. Ryan. And I make custom content as well for the Icewind Dale project.
This is Slowdive Fan, a.k.a. Jeremy Smith. And I'm the team lead for the Icewind Dale project. And you're listening to the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
This is so exciting. Wow. Where to begin?
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hello, I'm Dave, Eat to Surf.
Hey, and I'm Trey, a.k.a. Eschercon Zelo.
And I'm David, a.k.a. Vavictus X.
Hey, and this is the 105th episode of the only Neverwinter Nights Communities podcast.
The podcast all about the Neverwinter Nights series of role-playing games.
Later in the show, Michelle interviews Slowdive, creator of Icewind Dale and Charnia modules.
And we are not streaming live tonight, as we don't have a host for that.
Trey,
now, what?
They can't hear you tell them that.
I know, but I just wanted them to let them know that we're not streaming when they're listening to this, you know. And not,
I got you.
And they won't be disappointed, you know, later when I say, when we don't say, oh, so who's an IRC? Because we're not going to say that.
Gotcha. Well, we could say that.
Hey, before we get to the news, though, I was wanting to tell you about a little something that happened to me this weekend. So my daughter, you know, she likes to play that module that we talked about way back episodes ago. Actually, it was a year ago because I looked at the save files, called Missing Dragon. You remember us talking about that, Dave? David, I don't know if you remember that, if you've listened to those episodes or not. But
yeah,
I do, and I brought up the
form
you linked, so I've been reading through it.
You've been here since number six. I forgot. Sorry.
Yeah.
so you're like an old friend.
Yeah, I was just a listener, but.
But anyway, Saturday, Emmy comes in and goes, "Daddy, I want to play that game. You know that game where I can ride the horses and talk to the spiders?" And I said, "Oh yeah, Missing Dragon." Okay, so I fire it up for her and leave her to it. And about 20 minutes later, I hear, "Daddy, the horses won't let me ride them."
Oh, CEP thing.
They just shake their heads no. And so I come here and go, "What?" And so sure enough, I click on one of the horses in the barn, because in this mod you can ride any horse that you own. If you don't own it, you can't ride it, of course. And the way he did it, I think he used a script where you click on it and a menu pops up and you say mount horse. Well, when you would do that, the horse would just shake. The menu would disappear and the horse would start shaking his head no, which I thought that was kind of weird that it shook its head.
Is that a 1.69 thing?
Well, so first of all, I went to the comments of his mod out on the vault, and I put it in there and let him know. And then I also emailed him. His handle is Makem. And I actually got an email back from him, and he wasn't sure what was going on. But at the same time that I sent all that, I also posted a thread out on the Bioware forums, and because I thought maybe it had something to do with, you know, all the CEP updates that I'd put on since then.
Right.
Because I know that CEP uses heavily horse scripts and horses and all that stuff, right?
Right.
And anyway, Barry replied pretty almost immediately out there, and he pointed me to Prolific's horse manuals and all that stuff out there because he wasn't really sure what was going on. And I thanked him, and he did ask, does it do it when you pull up an old saved game? And so I went and tried an old saved game, and actually when I pulled up a saved game of that mod, the horses worked. So I told him that out there. And then the Crit, have y'all heard of him? I see him posting in the forums all the time. He actually explains exactly what the problem is, and talks about how a phenotypes.2da file is moved up between the CEP hacks incorrectly or something. And he actually tells me how to manually fix it.
So the things were in the wrong order?
Was in the wrong order is what he thinks. And then Barry agrees and says, oh, yeah, we need to fix that. So he goes and fixes it. And then, like, you know, 12 hours later, there's now a fix to that that you can download with CEP 2.2.
So it does work now?
Or run the updater. And so, no, I haven't had a chance to try that because I just read all this before we before the show started tonight. So, yeah, I'm going to go try that out. But anyway.
Well, that's funny because your daughter's doing that. My son this weekend wanted to play, how does he say it, like, Never Enter Ites or something like that. But, I mean, he can speak. He just never has heard it said right, I guess. And
yeah, because you don't know how to say it either.
Yeah, and I say, hey, let's play Never Enter Ites. And
I say that too, actually.
So I pulled up our my city and just was walking him around it, and I was realizing, oh, yeah, no one can do this anymore because it's the old CEP 1.5 or something. So I'm going to start updating that for a 2009.
Right. So because of how these were ordered, at some point Crit said that actually any mod that still uses 2.0 will have this problem.
So they need to fix them. Now that there is a fix, so what does the mod user or builder have to do now that they've got the fix?
Actually, I don't think they have to do anything. I think you just, from what I understand, is because Barry posted and he said the 2.0 top hack has been fixed and posted on the Vault CEP 2.2 page. You can also use the updater and get it now.
Gotcha.
So I guess just the players would just have to get an update of CEP.
Right.
And then it should be fixed, is the way I understand it.
Yeah, it makes sense. Totally makes sense.
Anyway, check out that thread out there and see what you
think. Awesome. Well, good job. Good job.
Thank you. So I think I found something that might help people.
Well, your daughter did anyway.
Yeah, actually, my daughter did.
Yeah, give her
thank you.
That's great.
Thanks to baby Trey.
Get in game and level up, Daddy.
On to the news, unless y'all want to talk about something else.
Under the news.
I'll start with the news since I've read about this one. Evidently, a guy named Kenneth Song, alias Sirachrist.
Wait, Trey's starting to pronounce a name. We got to get involved here.
Sirachrist.
Sirachrist. Sirachrist.
See, here's something that David might not know yet. Is this? If you hear Trey start talking about a name, you got to quickly look at the notes.
And help him out.
I already have the notes.
He knows that.
No, but I understand that. But if he just starts with any kind of a name, like maybe even his own, you know, he might go, and this is how would you pronounce that?
I've never heard him mispronounce his own name.
Give him a chance.
I'm gonna. What is it? Surf to eat.
There you go.
I can't remember. So anyway, he. I guess he created a remix of the NWNOC song, the original theme song. And so I'm going to play it for you right here.
We'll be right back.
Atari Europe is being bought? Atari's global operations will soon be narrowed down to the U.S. only, as Namco Bandai is reportedly set to acquire Atari Europe from a parent company, Infogrames, next month. Having already acquired a 34% stake in Atari Europe last year, Namco Bandai is now expecting to purchase the remaining 66% of the company next month, reports MCV. When it will be swallowed up by the newly formed distribution partners, a.k.a. Namco Bandai Partners.
Where'd we get that news, too?
There's a link in the show notes to TotalVideoGames.com.
Okay. Yeah, I found that. I came across that. I was also going to talk about some of the... You know, we put this out in our news forum. Whenever I find news, I like to put it out in the news forum.
Uh-huh.
And by the way, we need to get GQ to just start doing that. Just put them in our news forums, because that's where I like to get them.
Right, so we can get community notes on it.
Yeah, plus you have people reply to it as well with additional information. And Taibe actually replied and said he had heard about that last week and hoped that the acquisition wouldn't hinder the production release of international modules or expansions for NWN2.
I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, it can't hurt.
I think the sooner that we get the D&D rights away from Atari, the better.
Oh, really? Yes. And also, Gerilwyn, who is a new person on our forums, which you might be hearing some more information about him later. He also said that the part that Namco is buying is not a development shop; it's their European distributor. So unless Atari is having bigger problems, he doubts that this will affect their development projects.
Yeah, and they've already been messing with the distributorship over there for a bit. Yeah. That's where all that turmoil's been going, in the shutting down of different parts.
So, yeah, I think they're just trying to stretch what dollars they do have as far as they can.
Yeah.
Okay, so check that out.
Yeah, the Vault screenshot contest has winners now. The results for the contest are in, and Neverwinter Nights won. Beer Baron 72 was the winner, with the entry Uth Nargai, Countryside. The Neverwinter Nights 2 winner was Ashaba Team with Semberholm, Ithil Silve. And we'll have a link in the show notes to those.
I actually really liked the Neverwinter Nights 1 screenshot. I thought it was very well done.
I think we got to run with them, because it's the Beyond the Pale's been having a hard time getting anybody with the contests anyway.
Yeah.
I'm serious. I mean, the last, that one contest died.
I think both the screenshots were very good.
I guess it was my impression that a lot of people made entries for this.
Yeah, a lot more than have done in the past, so I think we need to at least say it.
Okay. Hey, and also in the news, A Land Far Away put out their May 09 update, and that's an NWN2 persistent server. I guess this is the first of their monthly updates that they're going to be sending out. And in this update, they introduce you to their new DM staff, and they tell a little bit about how Alpha, Land Far Away, Alpha, handles long-term character development. So go and check that out over in the vault. We'll have a link to it.
Neverwinter Nights 1 Eternal Destiny PW had bonus XP this past weekend, arriving just in time for the Memorial Day holiday this past weekend, bonus XP weekend at the Eternal Destiny Persistent World Server.
Yeah, we're a little bit late on this news, but as far as the bonus XP, but I wanted to go ahead and include it even though you probably won't be able to go right there right now and get the extra XP, but still go check it out.
Right. Eternal Destiny is a heavy action server, very few rules, and very much open to suggestions from dedicated players. They do support extensive roleplay as well, with DMs positioned around the globe, prepared to provide you with a unique experience. And players are also quite helpful to those just starting out. So even if, you know, obviously the bonus XP weekend is over, but it sounds like it might be a good place to jump in if you're an action gamer.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. Actually, Trey and I, too, went to an action server the other night testing our Say to Play. That was pretty fun.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Oh, yeah. I taught Emmy how to use that while she was playing Missing Dragon, too.
Is that cool?
Yeah, she thought it was awesome.
So it understood her voice pretty good?
Oh, yeah. I showed her how to do it. She used inventory and close inventory mostly is all, most of what she used. Okay, so now we have on the show tonight as the main topic interview, Slow Dive. And in this interview, Michelle interviews Slow Dive, and they focus on their Icewind Dell project.
Oh, didn't they just release Chapter 1?
Yes.
I believe so.
Yep. Yeah, so it was a very interesting interview. I lurked through most of it, so you may hear me depending on if they included that or not.
Sweet.
Mostly they just thought I was asleep because I was just listening.
Once they get that rep of being a night worker,
yeah,
they just assume you're asleep.
So without further ado, here it is.
Oh, just a little bit of ado.
Welcome, the Icewind Dale team. Today we will be focused on the Icewind Dale project, a prologue already released on the Vault and doing quite well at 9.4 player rating. Would you all like to introduce yourselves, starting with Ryan?
I'm Ryan. I've been in the community probably since about a year and a half, like two Februaries ago. And what else would you like to know?
Well, if you tell us a little bit about yourself, your hobbies, you know, whatever you feel like telling the community.
Oh, I'm Canadian. And my hobbies, I like a lot of sports, but pretty much computer games. I really only use, like, the Neverwinter Nights because who has time for anything else?
Awesome.
That's about it.
Okay. Trevor?
I've been in the community for about, well, since Neverwinter 1, but before that I've been modding Baldur's Gate and the other Infinity Engine games. So I've been doing stuff for a little while.
Okay, and I keep wanting to call him Slow Dive, it's funny. Jeremy?
You can say Slow Dive, that's fine. Let's see, Slow Dive here. I've been with the community probably since about summer of 2006. And let's see, I work in the power systems industry, electrical engineer. My hobbies are, you know, computer role-playing games, mostly just the D&D ones, rock climbing, music, you know, recording music and writing music, renewable energy, off-grid living, that kind of stuff. And I, my wife and I started playing golf this past year. So we're not very good.
Can I say that? I'll cut it out if you want me to. You are also going to be a father soon.
Yes, I am.
That is so cool.
In July.
Yeah. Okay, first child. We aren't going to see him much soon.
Yeah, I'll be sleeping.
And when did you all start modding, and what games have you modded for? Just pick somebody to start.
Trevor.
All right. I've been doing this. Started about 9 years ago with Baldur's Gate games. I played them, and I just wanted to take them apart or something, see how it worked out. So I would do a little bit of modding, nothing serious. And then finally got Neverwinter 1, and yeah, that was really fun, playing with the tool set. There wasn't a whole lot you could do. The graphics were pretty primitive, but it was still fun. And I like Neverwinter 2 now because of the freedom. There's so much you can do, a lot of modding options. Mostly I use this for practice for my freelance stuff that I do, actually. I'd like to make a career out of it one of these days. pretty much how I got into it.
Okay, Jeremy?
Modding, let's see. Probably the first game that I did a little modding was they had a game for the Commodore 64. It was called Adventure Construction Set. And that was the first one. I haven't really done anything since then. I think Neverwinter Nights 1 was the first, you know, real modules that I started working on. And I didn't really start doing that until 2006. And it was mostly just trying to learn the tool set in preparation for the Neverwinter Nights 2 tool set that was going to come out.
You did Chronicles of Charnia, didn't you, in Neverwinter Nights 1 prior to making the leap?
Yeah.
Yeah, I played that one, actually.
It was kind of just to learn some of the tricks of the trade. And I saw that Adam Miller was doing kind of a similar thing with Dark Waters, and I thought, okay, if it's good enough for him, I'll try playing with the tool set and then try to import it over into Neverwinter Nights 2 once it was available. And so I tried playing Neverwinter Nights 1 when it first came out in 2002, but I had a really hard time with the companion system because I was so used to the Gold Box series and the Infinity Engine games, so I kind of ended up shelving it.
Lack of companion system, you mean?
Yeah, you just didn't have as much control over the companions.
Right.
And
I think it was a community patch that actually allows you to get into their backpack.
Right. Yeah, and I heard that later on. Yeah, they came up with some workarounds for that. But I had already given up. I already went back to Baldur's Gate and Icewindell stuff and never came back. Until I heard that Neverwinter Nights 2 is coming out and that it was going to have, you know, complete control over companions.
Ryan?
When did I start modding? I was actually going to say Neverwinter Nights 2, but if you want to count this, there was the only gold box I ever had was around 94. It was called Unlimited Adventures. There wasn't really an internet then, so you could only make it pretty much for yourself. So it wasn't that exciting, but I did start there. And a lot of the art from that game still crops up today, like my avatar photo. I bought Neverwinter Nights 1 thinking I would use the tool set, but I didn't really do anything and I didn't enjoy it that much, mostly for the same reasons. So number 2 is definitely where I started actually, you know, doing modding that other people were seeing, like the community.
Okay. Jeremy, I know you made the leap from Neverwinter Nights 1 to Neverwinter Nights 2. How was that transition?
Pretty quick. I didn't have a lot of experience with compared to some of the other modders with Neverwinter Nights 1, but I mean, there were some aspects of Neverwinter Nights 1 that I kind of miss out on. They had the Gestalt system, the camera control system. A lot of you're probably familiar with this, Lisa, but there's a lot of mods that use the camera control system where you could, you know, move the camera around, zoom, go up in the air, pan,
right,
track, and you know,
even during cutscenes.
Yeah, during cutscenes, and you can do some really cool stuff, you know, cinematic stuff with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of miss that. I tried using that a little bit, and it was really nice. And I haven't heard if there's any way to unlock the camera yet with Neverwinter Nights 2, so you could do that. But the other thing is, you know, it's really simple and quick to make areas. Didn't take nearly as long. That was nice, and the custom content was a lot easier to create models.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to buy some expensive programs or the animation stuff is, you know, it was kind of tricky. We had to wait till there was a granny converter.
The export.
Plugin. Yeah, that Exportron. But with Neverwinter Nights 2, some of the things that it has that are really cool are, you know, you can open multiple windows. Before, you just had to close. If you were doing a dialogue, you'd have to close it to open up a script and some things like that. But now you can have, you know, three areas open at one time and as many dialogues and script as you want open. There's also, you can pass parameters in your scripts. So, you know, your conversation and action parts of dialogue, you can do parameter passing, which is really cool. So there's a lot of things you can do.
I accidentally missed, I passed up a question, I apologize. Are you all on any other projects that you'd like to talk about? Get the word out?
Nobody's gonna talk?
I've made two things so far that are on the vault. The Baldur's Gate GUI, which is a reskin of the Neverwhere Nights game. GUI. And, it's got a Hall of Fame. A lot of people seem to like it.
Cool.
I also made a cliff pack, which is basically a set of 8 different placeable combinations. It's basically all the different cliff textures that are currently in the tool set put into a placeable that, reduces the stretching of the traditional terrain sculpting. Also working on a couple of modules. I don't know if I'll finish them anytime soon, but working on a Baldur's Gate 2 conversion.
I heard about that.
It's going to be pretty challenging. But it would be nice to see it come out. And I'd also like to do a Dungeon Siege 2 conversion.
Ah, I hope it's better than that horrible movie they did.
I never saw that.
Please don't.
Yeah, I just think that a big module that takes it from 1 to 30, that would be a really...
Yeah, I've actually played a lot of the Dungeon Siege games, so I used to have fun doing it. It was kind of like mindless work. I enjoyed it, though. I've never played Icewind Dale, and I've never played Baldur's Gate. I am like the odd man out in Neverwinter Nights 2 community.
You're too busy playing MMOs.
Ah, there was a time. Yes, this is true. How about you, Ryan?
I started a project shortly after I joined the community. It was called Islander. That will still come out probably middle summer.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it started out, some areas were a learning experience, so it was kind of the hard way to do it, but I do have a cohesive storyline and stuff. What you can look forward to in it is there's a lot of things that almost make it feel like a different game, like I've redone spell effects, stuff like that, added different armor types. Basically, I've tried to give a little bit of everything in it. Maybe nothing is strong suit, but it's got a lot. I also worked on Team Jolly for White Rose 2. A lot of the special effects that you've never seen before, actually all of them were from me, like the blizzard and some of the teleport effects and stuff like that, as well as the custom content like the hoods.
Cool.
And various other things. Obviously, I'm on the Icewind Dale thing. And I'll probably release the placeables I put in Islander as just a community pack, because there's a lot of stuff that could really increase what you can do, like pianos and other instruments, bird cages, just stuff that's really lacking right now.
Those nice ambient kind of things that always seem to be missing.
Yeah, even I think the most widely used one will probably be the shop counters. I have it where you can put glass over top of it so it looks like you can have a jewels.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, display case, I guess is the word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's about it for me.
How about you, Jeremy?
Pretty much all I've done with Neverwinter Nights 2 is just the Chronicles of Charnia series. I had two shorter modules that were kind of more just story or introduction to the setting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked on a little bit longer one called Lanterna, which came out not too long ago. And that's about it.
Yep. I for one know very little bit, very, very little bit about Icewind Dale. Could you give us a little summary on the story?
Sure, who wants to give it?
Me?
Sure, go ahead.
basically there's a village in the, I guess it's the Dale Lands, like the, basically the frozen north of the realms. And they all kind of live off the life force coming from this giant tree. And the game is more or less you're protecting that from people who are trying to get at it. And that pretty much is the story without getting too in-depth and giving away plot points.
Right. What about the Icewind Dale? What about Icewind Dale made you guys want to bring it alive in Neverwinter Nights 2? Or I guess I should actually ask Jeremy that since he launched this.
For me, it was Icewind Dale. When I first started playing, well, because I remember, you know, I played the Gold Box series, and that was kind of, you know, the style I was used to with the pen and paper D&D, where it's turn-based. And I remember when Baldur's Gate came out, and I just remember looking at it thinking that it looked like a video game and not, you know, a turn-based D&D game. But I went ahead and tried it, and I loved it. And when Icewind Dale came out, I played through that. And to me, it kind of just it fit better a little bit more with my style. You know, there's a lot of tactical combat strategy involved. It had a pretty good storyline, good pacing of the story. So it kind of just, the scenery was really beautiful. It was really well done. The music was really good. And so I just, you know, for me, it was, there's already a Baldur's Gate project underway. And I, you know, I thought this would be, you know, a good opportunity to see Icewind Dale in a different engine, a little bit different way of looking at it. You know, some people think the old Infinity engine maybe is a little too clunky or too difficult to work with and outdated, you know. But so this kind of will give it a little bit different look to me. I still play the old one as well, but, you know, just trying something maybe a little different. You have different with the 3.5 rules. So it's just kind of a different look at it. Hopefully it'll be worthwhile. And for some people, it'll be a trip down memory lane. And for others, it might be a first time. Maybe it'll get them to go out and buy the original game and try that too.
It'll be a first time for me. I do intend on playing it, but I probably won't go buy the old one. I actually bought BG2, all the expansions. It was like 5 discs or something. Right. And got it all installed on my computer, loaded it up, and I was like, ew. I looked at the interface, and I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to try to get past this, and I'm moving around. And I couldn't figure out how to get that person in that cage out of it. I couldn't find a key. I couldn't find a hint. I couldn't find nothing. I closed the game, uninstalled it, and never touched it again.
You know, there's things called walkthroughs. They're all over the internet.
I despise them. I really do. I will not look at
You're missing out.
I will not look at a walkthrough unless I feel like I've ran into a bug. So pretty much I just couldn't figure out how to start the game. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, my patience is, well, not as great as other people's.
if there is one that you're going to play, that would be the one. You have to just, you know, stick it out for a little bit and get used to it. But Baldur's Gate 2 is really good.
I might feel, you know, brave one day, a lot more calm and not too much coffee and go in, dive in another time. Okay, will this module be done in chapters, or will you be releasing it fully complete?
Right now, we're doing it in chapters. That's the intention. I did that with the Lanterna project. I did, you know, I broke it down into 3 chapters, and then I was going to break it down to 6 chapters because 3 seemed like they were too big. But eventually, I went back to doing it in three chapters again, and that worked out pretty well. So. I think it kind of keeps you motivated. It keeps you going, you know, having some things that you release every so often. It gives you a chance to get some feedback before you get too far into the whole project. You can kind of learn as you go and fix things now rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's some benefits to it.
Being this is such a large project, and this question is for all of you, what kind of process have you been going through working as a team on, well, this it's very ambitious.
Is Somebody want to talk?
Go, Ryan.
Yeah. I think I'm modeling the tree, right, which is central to the whole theme. I mean, it's probably like the icon of the game. I haven't really come up with a process, but we're basically trying to make it line up. So building it in 3D Studio, and then you put it in the game, and it's really kind of hard because the branches might be going through houses or whatever. So really, it's been taking like more than a month, even though you could probably do it in 2 days if you didn't have to make it fit. And our teamwork process is basically I tell him what I'm up to every couple weeks, and I don't touch his terraining. I build around it, and he promises not to change the terrain while he's bored waiting for me to finish the tree.
So, I wish there was a way you can export the terrain and import it into 3D Max. But
yeah, if this was going to be a continuous thing, I would find a way to make it a little more. It's all guess and test. I would somehow deal with that, but it's one item that we have to do. And then
isn't there a way, you know, I know that I'm not a modeler, but I do live with one. Yeah. Isn't there a way to make objects scalable, though?
Yeah.
They are. That's not the problem. It's the fact of the matter is I have to make it fit the shape of the game, otherwise it changes the layout of the town.
Oh, I see.
So once it's, like, you need the major roots. That's how the town is based. It's in the roots of the tree. Like, there's little houses.
Oh, like a networking.
Yeah. So you need the major roots in place. The rest, obviously, you can take liberties with just, you know, artistic impression. But after this, I won't have to make anything fit specifically anymore. So it's not like we need to develop a better system because it's just a one-time thing, right?
That's really nifty.
Yeah.
And, Trevor, we need to go to you. Any challenges that, you know, you've faced being in such a large project?
So far, my role seems pretty small. I've only done a couple things. But
there are no small roles.
Well, I'd like to do some more. I am working on the temple for the first area, and that's actually a pretty big building. And it's taken me some time to get it done. And I also have to make a door, get that working. So I actually got to do a little bit of animating.
That fun stuff.
Yeah, I'd like to do some more stuff later. Maybe some of the stuff for the temple. I know I've reskinned stuff for my Baldur's Gate mod, so maybe I can do a tile set of reskin. And we've just been communicating by email. He'll send me something and I'll let him know what I'm doing. But
are you guys using anything like the SVN updater or anything like that?
Not yet. We might soon. We'll have to see.
Right now, we're not that advanced yet.
Oh, see, I get like 5 of them in my email every day every time someone changes the Misery Stone. I was like, okay, another one. It's a continual update. Every time I have to load the module for something.
Yeah, I think that's because we're just making 3D models, we don't need to. Like, we're not going to touch his whatever he's got going on in the tool set is why we haven't had the need for that.
Ah, okay. I was going to say, will there be any custom placeables and models in the module? But we've already answered this.
Yes, there are lots.
There is a very cool networking tree that needs to get fit.
Yes. And probably after that, I'm going to have to make some cliffs because I'm sure people know in the tool set you cannot have two different vertical levels that are walkable. So you can't have like an archway going over a street with people able to walk above and below. So for that reason, you cannot paint a cliff that kind of hangs over something because the terrain paintbrush won't let you do that. So I'm just going to have to make some placeables that kind of ledges, I guess. To finish off the tree town.
Does anybody else hate those stretched out mountainsides?
Nope.
Oh, yes. I cannot stand them. I can't stand looking at them. No, they're stock.
I can get rid of them.
Well, I made my cliff back.
Which stock ones are you talking about?
Yeah.
I don't know. Every time I go into a module, they have
That's not stock. That's just people stretching out the.
Oh, is it? See,
much.
I'm going to have to remove this because I'm going to offend people because
know, this is a good tip for them to hear.
It's terrible. Yeah, I mean, it's seriously, it just looks like this skewed.
Yeah, it does. It's
vortex of vertigo. I mean, it's
the terrain is fine normally. For some reason, vertically, it doesn't calculate. It just stretches forever. So if you want to make mountains, you're best to use the rock face placeables and just enlarge them, because no matter how much you vertically stretch placeables, they retain the quality of their, like, they don't stretch. So mm-hmm. I use rocks to make mountains, like really big rock placeables.
Any last comments, guys? Go, Jeremy!
What we've been doing so far for the project is we had a sign-up list on the Vault page for the project. And, you know, what I've been doing is, rather than me just kind of doing the whole thing or trying to find people to commit full-time to being part of the project, I thought it would be a little easier if I just put together a sign-up sheet and people could just go sign up, pick something that they want to work on, you know, if it's fits their style or it sounds fun to them, and sign up for it, and then, you know, just submit the stuff and we'll throw it in there. That way it's kind of more of a community project and everybody's kind of involved, and I don't have to do all the work myself. And nobody has to commit, you know, if they decide that they just want to make a couple things and that's all they have time for and they don't want to commit in the future, that works out fine too. So that's on the Vault. You can go there and sign up to take part in the next chapter. It'll start. And the chapter one right now is in beta. It's up on the Vault as well. And if you want to go through and test, I'm not sure when this gets released, the podcast, but it'll be up there to start testing.
105 or 6, I believe. It's like one or two away.
Okay. So it'll probably still be in beta at that point. So if people want to go check it out, but it'll be released pretty quick, the next chapter. So you can sign up for the second chapter.
Trevor, any last comment?
Not really. I would like to. I'm looking forward to doing some more placeables. One thing that's coming to mind after we've been discussing about the tree is the big dragon head for that cave. It's going to be something that one of us is probably going to have to do. And we'll have to coordinate something then, I'm sure, with the whole terrain scaling issue.
Yes, that's the beginning of chapter two.
We'll be back on that pretty soon.
Ryan?
I would just like to add that most of the good stuff is probably done by Trevor. But for other people interested in joining the project, certain things might be easier to do, but we can still benefit from someone being able to do it, right? Because if it's a basic model I can do, it frees up the people who know more to do what they really are needed to do. So everyone should see what they can offer if they're interested.
Yeah, and I have, you know, on the sign-up list, there's even some very, very basic, simple things like the non-player characters, the NPC blueprints, and you can sign up and create the blueprints where you just, all you're doing is just putting clothes on people and making hair colors, you know, just like you'd make your own character, make them match the characters from the original game. So there's some really simple things, and then there's a lot more complicated tasks that you can sign up for too.
And can we have a, do you mind if I put an email in the show notes in case anybody wants to offer their services?
Well, we can do the email, but we have on the Vault page, there's the email there, and then there's also the sign-up sheet is there too, so you can see what's still
okay.
Available.
Well, I'll make sure that I point that out then in the show notes.
Do you want to give my email anyway? Or?
No, that's how you have it set up. I'll just make sure that it's pointed out.
Okay.
Like I make a little bit of a big deal about it. Hey, David, can I chime you in for a moment?
Sure.
You actually played the module today, did you not?
Yes, I did.
Do you have any comments for the guys?
I'm a big fan of the original game, and coming from a fan, it does not disappoint at all.
Well, there you go.
Even the tree?
I don't think he played the tree. I just put it up probably an hour ago.
Oh, no.
I just played the prologue.
He played the prologue.
Yeah.
Okay. Give the tree some time.
Yeah, it's chapter one.
Give it some water and some sun and some love.
Yeah, and some a lot more modeling.
Well, there's a few people that have helped out on this project that I wanted to mention. There's, I just kind of go down the list here. There's Dwarven Dervish, who put together the exterior for the Veil of Shadows. There's also Mr. Monko, who is working on the airship, Oswald's airship in Koldahar. And he also put together a UI button that allows you to access the party editor at any point in time in the game. There's also Snakebane, and Snakebane's been putting together a bunch of custom placeables for the project as well. There's also Blade Runner 13, who put together most, if not all, of the non-player character blueprints. And then also Yoshi 864 has been working on a couple of the NPC blueprints. And then also we have, there's a couple of models that we've used. We use artichokes, Yeti, and we've also used the Robinson Workshop, the pocket, the airship interiors, mm-hmm. or just the ship interiors, which we used for the Oswald's airship. And I think that's pretty much everybody.
Cool.
Oh, there's also one other person that I need to mention, and that's Sothis B, who put together a tool that is probably the coolest tool ever, and it's a conversation converter tool that basically brings all the dialogue from the Infinity Engine games and imports it into Neverwinter Nights 2. And
nifty.
That thing is going to save us hundreds of hours, probably. But it's also, it's usable by, you know, this project, and it's also being used by the Baldur's Gate project and, you know, anyone else who's, I think there's also a project for Tales of the Sword Coast underway. And, I mean, there's a number of projects that will probably be able to utilize that tool. So that was really cool that he did that.
That is very cool. You guys did a great interview. I really, really appreciate it, and I wanted to thank you for coming. Taking the time out and getting across all these wonderful time zones. David, thank you for lurking.
You're welcome.
Okay, and we're back.
And we're back.
We are back, indeed.
Hey, shout out to Axe and his family. I don't know if y'all knew about this. It's in our forums as well as over on the BioWare forums. But he and his family were having some health problems, and they had a fire.
Whoa.
So I guess somebody was wondering why Axe wasn't on the forums for a while, and they started a thread called Where's Axe? And so if you want to go over there and let him know you're thinking about him, we'll include that in the show notes.
Yeah,
as well.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we wish all the best to Axe and his family.
We'd like to take this chance to remind everybody of our new summer schedule. In June, we're going to be going bi-weekly. No, don't cry. I know, it's a shock, but we'll still be there. I think bi-weekly is going to fit everybody's schedule, including the listeners, because I guess people, I hear, go outside during the summer.
But, yeah.
That may have been known to happen from time to time.
Yeah, so I guess bi-weekly is what we're doing.
We also received a voicemail from Superfly 2000 about his Crossfire guild server. So he sent us about a 5 or 6 minute, I guess you could call it an advertisement, about his Xfire server. So here it is.
Hello. Hello, all Neverwinter Nights podcast listeners. This is Superfly 2000, and I was on once in the podcast. It was about my Neverwinter Nights server, but this time I thought to I thought to explain a little bit about my Crossfire guild and what Crossfire is. But first, a little bit about me. Well, as I said, I was having a Neverwinter Nights 1 server before. It was called the Moonsea Nomads, and it was, well, maybe not super successful, but it was a very fun time, and I was meeting many people and making new friends, players and DMs, and yeah, basically we had a fun time on my server and on other servers as well. And it was a great learning curve for me to learn to use the toolset and such. Well, personally or privately, I'm from Sweden, and I'm a civil engineer. That takes up most of my time and energy, actually. Okay, let's go to Crossfire. Well, I have a guild in this, and it's an Neverwinter Nights 1 guild, and I have well, maybe you're wondering what is Crossfire. Crossfire is a messenger application, not very unlike Microsoft Network Messenger, and you can you can send messages. But the thing with Crossfire is that it's made for gamers actually, and it's free. You can send messages. You can send messages in game. And I'm on their homepage now, so there are some functions here. You can add friends, of course, and then you can see what the server your friends are playing at, and you can also see what server the friends of your friends are playing at. So it's quite powerful. You can message inside game. So you don't have to alt tab to see the message and reply. in the server browser window and in the friend browser window, you can join their game by one click join. And there is a voice chat functionality, maybe like Ventrilo or something similar. There are chat rooms that also can be used in game or out of game. And group voice chat. There are some things that I don't use myself, like automatic patch downloads and stuff. I think it's a little bit complicated. But one thing that I do use is the screenshots. You can make screenshots and upload them to the site immediately. And you can also make movies and also upload them. It's quite neat. There are probably all other programs doing this also, but it's nice features inside this one. And you have your own profile page on the web where it says what games you are playing, and you can see your own game stats, and then you can even have a mini profile that you can put on the web on, like if you make a forum post, you can use this in your signature or something like that, so it shows your online offline status and stuff. Yeah, it's quite advanced, and it's free, so I can recommend this to any gamer really. And even though many of the gamers using Crossfire are maybe quite young and playing frags per second games, but still I think you can find quite good role players in Crossfire. So, well, I'm hoping that you will see the link to my Crossfire guild on the page for the podcast. Well, I'm hoping so. And it's a Neverwinter Nights 1 guild, and it from the beginning I was using it to recruit players to my Neverwinter Nights 1 server, but as it's non-existing for a while now, I have turned it into a more general kind of a general guild for all kinds of players, and on the front page I have examples of servers that I have played on myself and that I recommend to other players. And we have now 160 members. Yeah, that's not bad. So you can see if you install Crossfire and come into this guild, you can actually see all of these players, and usually about 40 of them are online in average time, and you can see their status, what games they are playing. You can chat with them, or you can invite them to your games or join their games, or yeah, whatever. And yeah, it's just not just for Neverwinter Nights, for any game. And yeah, it's a fun thing. So you will see the link on the podcast page, I'm hoping, so you can come check it out. Okay, thanks. I think that's enough for me. Superfly 2000, and yeah, thanks for listening.
All right, until next time.
Get in game
and level up.
Level up. Level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights Podcast is copyright 2009.
Okay, we have Dave and his other brother Dave on the show tonight.
Does that mean you started?
Okay, Dave eats surf. Okay, I'm going to call it Dave and David, okay?
Yeah, that's what we've been doing.
Hey, and we also received a voicemail from Super...
See, there's a name again.
Yep.
Superfly 2000. It's a tough one.
I'm trying to go faster than my mouth will go. And,
I'm Alexander, a.k.a. Loot Skull, and I'm lead designer with Ossian Studios.
Code Poets, also known as Kevin Smith, lead technical designer.
This is Alan Miranda, CEO of Ossian Studios and producer on Mysteries of Westgate, and we are live. Join us at OssianStudios.com.